great joy to serve this justice-seeking, loving congregation. Yes. And we are crowded today. There's some seats up here in the front. I know the kids might not want to, but they could switch together and provide a couple more seats. There's some seats right up here. There's also seating downstairs for people who are more comfortable. So I just want to let everybody know that you are so welcome here. Whether you are so excited to have a lot of people crowded around you, or you're feeling just a little claustrophobic, you are welcome here. You are welcome here whether you come with joy in your heart or whether you come with fear and pain. You are welcome here no matter who you are, no matter who you love, no matter how you express your gender or your ethnicity or race. You are welcome here. We try to create a loving, welcoming, inclusive home for everyone. I have a few announcements today, which I am going to pick up my thing to remember them all. The first one is that if you are a visitor here, you are especially welcome. And there's a little flyer on the front of your seats that you can fill out to get announcements during the week about what's happening at Wolf. And that's true for everybody. So much of our congregational life happens outside of Sunday morning in small groups and other activities. And we would welcome everyone to be there. But you need to read your announcements to find out what they are. After this service, there's going to be coffee downstairs. There's also coffee online. Not coffee itself, but conversation after the service. And I want to throw out a welcome to the Inland Northwest Unitarian Universalist community out of Spokane. They have joined us here today, and they are online with us. And I just want to do a call out because my mom is watching. Aww. And a lot of people who knew me way back when. So welcome today. So we have a few announcements. At 12 o'clock today in Forest Hall, the group of, for those people who are concerned about people in violence, in violent situations, either domestic or sexual violence, can meet to talk about things to do and how to offer care. The social justice team meets tomorrow at 4 p.m. in Forest Hall, if you suddenly have an interest in that. And I wanted to let you know that the artist who's created this beautiful artwork on our walls, who's the photography, Carol Amani, is here today, and she'll be in coffee hour if you want to speak with her. Let us now take a moment and greet each other.
Thank you.
we light the chalice with words from Douglas John Traversa, and Ada will light our chalice for us. In a world filled with the darkness of ignorance, let us bring the light of reason. In a world filled with the darkness of despair, may we shine the light of hope. In a world filled with the darkness of hate, let us shine the light of love. Let us say our affirmation together.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Good morning. I'm Christine Leffler, your lay leader today. Hallelujah Here by Julian Jamaica Soto. Bring your broken hallelujah here. Bring the large one that is beyond repair. Bring the small one that is too soft to share. Bring your broken hallelujah here. I know that people have told you that before you can give, you have to get yourself together. They overstate the value of perfection by a lot. Or they forgot. You are the gift. We all bring some broken things, songs and dreams, and long-lost hopes. But here and together, we reach within. As a community, we begin again. And from the pieces, we will build something new. There is work that only you can do. We wait for you.
But it is always there. You just have to find it. Mama Mole led her son gently out of the dark burrow, up toward the light. But on their way out of the tunnel, Mama stopped. Do you see this little bulb, little mole? She asked. Mama pointed to a bulb squashed in the dark earth. It was brown, wrinkled, and lifeless. It's dead, Mama, said the little mole. No, my dear, Mama whispered softly. The bulb is not dead. Sometime soon it will feel the warmth of the sun. It will begin to grow and push its way out of the deep, cold earth. One day this bulb will become a beautiful yellow daffodil. Close your eyes, little mole. Can you see it dancing in the wind? Yes, Mama, cried little mole. I see it, I see it. That is hope, Mama said. Little Mole and Mama reached the top of the burrow where the sun was shining. Look up, Little Mole, Mama said. What do you see? Little Mole looked up. He saw woodpecker sitting in the tree, but the branches were bare. They stretched out like a skeleton, bones silhouetted against the sky. They're dead, Mama, said Little Mole. No, my dear, Mama whispered softly. The trees are not dead. One day soon, buds will appear, and these branches will be covered in bright green leaves. Close your eyes, Little Mole. Can you see them dancing in the wind? Yes, Mama, cried Little Mole. I see them, I see them. That is hope, said Mama. Little Mole and his mama scurried along the edge of the woods until they came to Mr. Rabbit's garden. An old brown flower pot was lying on its side in the soil. Under the rim, something small and shriveled was hanging. It's dead, Mama, said Little Mole. No, my dear, Mama said, whispered softly. The chrysalis is not dead. One day soon, the butterfly growing inside will burst out of her shell. She will spread her wings and fly free among the flowers. Close your eyes, little mole, said Mama. Can you see her dancing in the wind? Yes, Mama, cried little mole. I see her, I see her. That is hope, said Mama. Little mole and his mama went home. I had a wonderful day today, Mama, said Little Mole happily. Now I know there's always hope, even in the darkest places. Mama smiled as she tucked Little Mole into bed, pulled his quilt up under his chin, and kissed him goodnight. And Little Mole closed his eyes and fell fast asleep, dreaming of yellow daffodils, green trees, and beautiful butterflies dancing together in the wind. And now we will sing our children to their class.
This is the time in our service when we pause to remember that it is love that built our community, love that built the fires that warm us and planted the trees that shade us. We drink from wells that we did not dig, and we are ever grateful for all of the early stewards of this land, beginning with the original peoples, the indigenous tribes, many of whom live among us today and to whom our doors are always open. WOOF exists because of the generous spirit and commitment of all those who came before us, just as our future health depends on the dedication and commitment of those here now. May the ushers come forward to now gratefully receive this morning's offerings. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you. Thank you for these gifts and also the gift of your presence. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
There is so much joy and sorrow in the world. Even this week, there is so much in our hearts. Shocked and afraid, unable to understand how I live in a world where half the voters experience the world so differently than I do. I took some mental health time on Wednesday afternoon and went to my garden plot. You may remember that the sun was bright and warm and glorious that day. Bright yellow marigolds and orange zinnias bloomed throughout my community garden. In my plot, the basil had finally died, but my pepper plant has 3 growing peppers. The cabbages and Brussels sprouts are almost ready to harvest. The strawberries are blooming with white flowers in a crazy hope that they might bear more fruit this season. Arugula flourished in a large garden-like patch. When the arugula went to seed early in the summer, I cut down those large, unwieldy plants and threw them on some bare soil where some seeds had never come up. Weeks later, I noticed small green sprouts pushing through the dead stalks. I moved all that dead spring arugula aside, and the seedlings grew up healthy. And now I am devouring arugula, which I love. I drank in the late fall sun while I cut beans from the beanstalks off their poles and threw them in the compost pile. Later, as I returned to my to-do list, I felt calmer, more grounded. I reminded of the bounty of the earth, that it is remarkable, and that life is always tenacious. So I want us all, during this time of meditation, reflection, and prayer, to bring to mind something that sustains you and grounds you. Maybe it is a place. Maybe it's a person or people or a particular activity. Maybe it is poetry or meditation or God. Imagine, close your eyes, and just imagine being with or engaged with such, with what sustains you. Where are you? What do you see? How do you feel? What do you hear? Let us just take a moment to be with what sustains us. We will now stay seated and sing Filled with Loving Kindness. The words will be before you.
Locates itself in the premise that we don't know what will happen, and that it is in that spaciousness of uncertainty is room to act. When you recognize uncertainty, you recognize that you may be able to influence the outcomes, you alone or in concert with a few dozen or several million others. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable, an alternative to the certainty of both optimists and pessimists. Optimists think it'll all be fine without our involvement. Pessimists adopt the opposite position. Both excuse themselves from acting. It is the belief that what we do matters, even though how and when it may matter, who and what it may impact, are not things we can know beforehand. We may not, in fact, know them afterwards either, but they matter all the same. And history is full of people whose influence was most powerful after they were gone. By Rebecca Solnit. Well, it's wonderful to see so many of you here today. Your body heat has made this room a little warm. If you're sitting near a window, you may be able to crack it open and bring some cooler air in. There's a few people who would appreciate that. A reading from Reinhold Niebuhr. Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing true or beautiful makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, forgiveness, we are saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness.
The endless conversation these days is what on earth happened on Tuesday. How is it that half American voters knowingly voted for hate? How did they vote for incivility, misogyny, racism, xenophobia, transphobia, and homophobia? How could they vote for the approval of the January 6th insurrection? Or for a man convicted of sexual assault and fraud? Or with visible mental illness and dementia? Or who says loudly and clearly that authoritarianism is his goal? But they did. Men, women, young people, older people, and people of color came together and said yes, decisively yes. Their vote for hatred, dysfunction, and authoritarianism is painful for those of us who believe every person has inherent worth and dignity, who believe in love and reason, who believe in truth and science, in expertise and competence. This is a very hard moment. The decision seems to be a vote about economic pain. Food, housing, and other life necessities cost more than many can afford, and the voters blame the current administration. That isn't exactly fair, but it is true that leading politicians and news media rarely spoke empathetically about the way higher prices and escalating housing costs were hurting ordinary people. The U.S. has the strongest economic recovery in the world, they said over and over, sometimes in ways that sounded almost condescending, as if they just said it enough, people would stop complaining. However, when housing, utilities, and transportation costs most or more than your income, and you have to cut back, and at the same time, people in power keep saying the economy is actually great, well, that really sucks. During these last years, I have been known that really sucks. It feels dismissive at best and like gaslighting at worst. And I have been known during these last years to actually yell at these articles and speeches because they just feel so out of touch with people experiencing paying significantly more for everything at the grocery store, where sometimes my bill was twice what it used to be for the same food, and as everything else went up, $5 for streaming services or $10 for some other subscription or the gym or $50 for something else and several hundred dollars in the case of housing costs. And then Netflix wouldn't even let you share passwords anymore while they jacked up the price. So I totally get the fury, especially knowing that at least half of those increases were strictly to increase profits at corporations. They weren't related to all the other things people talk about. A winning campaign could have possibly been built on breaking up the monopolies that make price gouging possible, but that was rarely discussed. But even knowing the theory and how it feels to be dismissed by politicians and the media, I just have the hardest time getting myself inside the hearts and minds who think the new administration will help them and not hurt them. It feels nonsensical to me on all levels. I don't understand how people could push by the moral issues of the candidate and his ugly brutality toward all people who are not cis white men, and even then, a great deal of them as well. But this has happened, and I am afraid. I am afraid of suffering and danger to so many people, especially the undocumented, trans people, all queer people, women. I fear reversals to worker health and environmental protections. I fear dehumanization and violence. I fear the changes to the climate that could potentially harm all living things for centuries. I am afraid of darkness, of the darkness and pain coming for people across the globe from this decision. Then oddly, a couple of days ago, while still holding firmly to that pit of fear in my belly, I felt some hope spark. Why, I wondered, why would I feel hope now? And I think it is this. It's happening. Things are breaking. I have felt uneasy for a long time as monopolies have dominated the U.S. economy, with hardly any commentary on the subject, and as homelessness, drug addiction, deaths of despair, incivility, loneliness, and loss of community have increased everywhere, affecting so many people. This cannot hold, something whispered inside me. This cannot hold. I wished for a revolution. I felt it surging in the protest after George Floyd died. People were saying no, and government seemed, at least for a moment, to respond. In my vision of the revolution, we got universal health care and free education. People with mental illness and drug addiction could get help so they didn't have to live on the streets. People would know their neighbors, and people could find community that worked for them easily. People would not be targeted for violence or discrimination based simply on who they were. Well, that has not happened. Instead, the economic pain and its dismissal drove people to a different vision. Perhaps because not any other analysis or vision was held up for them to grab onto. Now, however, leaders and thinkers have taken real notice that things are not working for a very large swath of the American public. I am very afraid of what happens next in our country. But I also have this quiet, hopeful feeling that perhaps in the shambles, we may be able to discover opportunities and possibilities and begin to build the power we need for creating a society that is fairer and helps everyone flourish. This is a Buddhist story that I love. There once lived a farmer in a poor village, but he was thought to be quite wealthy and well off and fortunate because he had a horse. Then the horse ran away. His neighbors visited him and told him how sorry they were. And the farmer just shook his head and said, "I don't know. It could be bad. It could be good." A few weeks went by, and the horse returned with 6 wild horses. "What great luck," his neighbor said. "I don't know," the farmer responded. "It could be good. It could be bad." A short time later, the farmer's son was working to tame one of the new horses. As he tried to ride her, she threw him off and broke his arm and his leg badly. His neighbors came to console the farmer. "How awful," they said. "What terrible luck." "I don't know," the farmer said. "It could be bad. It could be good." A year later, a fierce war broke out in the country. When the army came to draft all fighting-aged men, they excused the farmer's son, since he required a crutch to walk. Writer and thinker Rebecca Solnit's work on hope echoes this Buddhist story. She places hope in the uncertainty of the future. Sure, we can make predictions or even be fairly confident of particular short-term outcomes, but we cannot really know what will happen next. The surprise of the country moving firmly towards a presidential candidate who seems to me unhinged is an example of the unexpected. And so was the fall of the Berlin Wall. Solnit writes, "In the spaciousness of uncertainty is room to act. When you recognize uncertainty, you recognize that you may be able to influence the outcomes. You alone, or you in concert with a few dozen or of several million others. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable, an alternative to the certainty of both optimists and pessimists. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable. Everything is interconnected, after all, in ways no human or computer can untangle. We cannot know how our actions or non-actions will affect the future. We cannot know what might happen, changing everything suddenly. But in that space, we can act so that the possibilities we dream of become more possible." Last week, Rebecca Solnit wrote, "They want you to feel powerless and to surrender and let them trample everything, and you are not going to let them. You are not giving up, and neither am I. The fact that we cannot save everything does not mean we cannot save anything, and everything we save is worth saving." There is always something to save. Always something we care enough about to act on. In her concession speech, Kamala Harris said, quoting an unnamed historian, "When it is dark enough, you can see the stars." Martin Luther King Jr. popularized this quote. He wrote, All of this reminds us that evil carries the seed of its own destruction. In the long run, right defeated is stronger than evil triumphant." Historian Charles A. Beard, when asked what the major lessons he had learned from history, answered, "First, whom the gods would destroy, they must first make mad with power. Second, the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceedingly small. Third, the bee fertilizes the flower it robs. Fourth, when it is dark enough, you can see the stars." This is a marvelous reflection on hope. King tells us those who do evil carry the seeds of their own destruction. Well, the news meeting has been happy to explain just how devastating the new administration's policies might be. And there lie the seeds of destruction King believed that those on the side of justice and Lung were even stronger when they were defeated. When pain is unleashed, the just and loving responses appear clearer and more obvious. That is why we revere the people in Europe who hid and saved Jewish people during the Holocaust. To live in those times was challenging enough, but to risk one's life to save others, we honor that, and we honor that courage. Beard said, "First, whom the gods would destroy, they must first make mad with power." Well, that seems to be true. "Second, the mills of God grind slowly, let they grind exceedingly small." Everything changes, Beard is telling us. It takes time, but history shows regimes based on greed and pain will eventually fail. Third, the bee fertilizes the flower it robs. When authoritarianism descends, it fertilizes those who will rise up and destroy it. People wake up, are ignited, inspired, and will and do try things they would not do before. Abortion rights were taken from women in the U.S., and now voters are putting abortion rights into their constitution. It appears across political divides. Out of the Depression came the New Deal. Out of the World War II came prosperity. As Solnit reminded her readers this week, people kept the faith in the dictatorships of South America in the 1970s and the 1980s, in the East Bloc countries and the USSR. Women are protesting right now in Iran, and people there are writing poetry. And fourth, Beard wrote, "When it is dark enough, you can see the stars." During these dark times, there will be stars lighting the dark, demonstrating our values and the way toward whatever happens next. Unitarian Universalist congregations are called to join those sparkling lights. We are called to model what it means to be part of loving, joyful communities. We are called to join in solidarity with those who want to make the world more just. We are called to stand with those who struggle for their basic human rights. So what does that mean for us next, particularly our UU congregations? And I have to tell you that I am with Frodo, who said in the Fellowship of the Ring, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." I can't tell you how many times this has run through my head recently. And Gandalf responds, "So do I. And so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time given to us." What happens next for all of us is we get to decide what we do with the time that is given to us. We get to decide what feels right and necessary in this moment and in the moment after that. And I urge us to do the inspiring thing and the courageous thing, because that matters. We can decide to plant seeds that might grow into something new and life-giving, the kind of country that we want to live in. We need to have hope and faith in possibilities. As Reinhold Niebuhr, who is most well known for writing the Serenity Prayer, said in the middle of the last century, when the world went through another very dark time, "Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope, Nothing true or beautiful makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. It's important to remember that seeds look pretty dead. And they are pretty small. Some of them are very, very small. And even good gardeners don't exactly know which seeds will sprout and push up into the soil, into the sun. Just ask anyone who tries to germinate carrot seeds in the Pacific Northwest. But sometimes they do. They do come up. And we get a vegetable, or a fruit, or a flower. In the same way, we can never know what will happen for sure when we plant a seed. Day after day, week after week, month after month, when we plant seeds of joy and love and curiosity and care and human rights and fairness and justice, we can't know what will happen. But some seeds will sprout, and they will grow into the sun. It is going to be really hard sometimes, and painful and discouraging. I don't think we can underestimate that. But it won't always feel that way. Because if we do this work with friends, and make new friends along the way, and discover new courage and love and faith within ourselves, it can also be fun, and it can be meaningful. I trust us. I know that we care. I know our principles and our values ground us and give us strength. I know we can be a star in the darkness. So, is this moment good or bad? Well, I'll tell you, it feels pretty bad. But as always, history is uncertain. Anything can happen, and it usually does. As we move into this next part of our lives, let's remember that there is always a love holding us. In this community, in the life-giving creativity of life, and in whatever we find holy, let us rest in that. Let us rise and sing.
We'll sing this through once completely, and then we're going to do it as a round. I'll have this side. We'll start first. Debbie will just give us a C chord.
There is a love holding me. There is a love holding all that I love. There is a love holding all. I rest in this love. There
will now extinguish our chalice, but not the principles and love of our faith. May they go forth with you into the day. We will now turn and face the back. Half of the people, the front half.
Yeah.